Hello there, dear listener. This is Brian, and I want you to rob us. But before we get to that, let me tell you a little bit about our year. 2025 is coming to an end, and we had a banner year here at Many Sided Media. We played games like Hell Whalers, Slug Blaster, Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast, and Last Train to Bremen. But did you know that those aren't the only games that we played? We actually played a whole lot more. Over on the Many Sided Media Patreon, we call it the Dice Pool, we play even more games and release bonus actual plays and cast talkbacks each and every month. And sometimes we even get the designers of the games that we play to run them for us. This year, we had Felix Isaacs on to run us through an original three-part Wild Sea adventure that we called Wild Sea Wreckage. I got to play a Mothrin Raveler conspiracy theorist and is probably my favorite character that I got to play all year. And then we had Caleb Zane Hewitt on, who was the designer of the Emmy Award-winning Triangle Agency, who introduced us to an original three-episode series featuring a brand new anomaly and guest player, Taylor Moore. Plus, we played games like Scurry, Token, Tacklebox, and honestly, a ton more. I know what you're wondering. When is this heist happening? Well, I'm getting to that, because members of the Dice Pool get every episode of My First Dungeon and Talk of the Table ad-free, plus MP3s of the original music we make for our shows, plus cast talkbacks for every episode of My First Dungeon, and bonus roundtable discussions featuring folks like Evil Hat publisher Fred Hicks, actual play scholar Dr. Emily Friedman, and Dimension 20 creator Brennan Lee Mulligan. So that's all pretty shiny, right? Certainly worth stealing. So here's where the robbery comes in. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/manysidedmedia and sign up to become a member of the Dice Pool. You'll pay $10 a month and you will get access to literally everything we have ever made. But don't worry, you have my express, official, legally binding verbal permission to pay $10 one time, download everything we have, cancel your subscription, and then ride off into the sunset with 5,231 minutes of TTRPG podcast goodness. That is 87 hours or 3.63 days. And that is just the stuff that we made this year. We've got three more years of podcast goodness sitting on our Patreon, so you are making away with a king's ransom for just $10. And if that's not highway robbery, I do not know what is. But also, if you want to stay and lend your monthly support to the hardworking crew behind all the shows we make, we certainly would not mind. 2026 is going to be our biggest year yet. We have planned massive seasons of My First Dungeon. We have all-star guests lined up for Talk of the Table, and we are even making a few new shows to add to your podcast haul. So please go to patreon.com/manysidedmedia and rob us of everything we have ever made. And if enough of you do, next year's haul will be even bigger. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
This week, we are sitting down with Jasmine Malave, who is a cast member on the D&D live theatrical experience 20-Sided Tavern and an actual play performer on shows like Twice Rolled Tales. But more importantly than all of that, a former cast member on the actual play podcast, My First
Yay!
Dungeon. Jasmine, welcome to the show. How you been?
I'm so good. How are you?
We're doing good. We're having a lot of fun making shows. And we're very excited to talk to you on this show and like kind of hear about your whole experience with 20-Sided Tavern.
Yeah, I'm excited. I feel like we're doing like an interview, but I'm also just catching up with my friends.
Yeah.
Every now and then we have these types of episodes where it's just like, we wanted to talk to our bud.
So nice.
It's very good to see you.
You as well.
And you're out and about all over the country on tour with the 20-Sided Tavern right now.
6 months so far, bopping around, looking at like six more months. TBD.
Wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
So for, I guess to start, for people who don't know what that is, the 20-Sided Tavern, can you just tell our audience what is the 20-Sided Tavern? What's this thing you've been touring with?
Yeah, so we did approximately 2 years, a year and a half off Broadway, of which I did about a year with them. And then it turned into the traveling show. We are basically bopping around everywhere doing essentially the same parameters of a one-shot every night on stage, except the characters, the people on stage performing those characters, and then what happens because of the dice changes every single night. So no two shows are the same, which is very fun.
There's also whole like interactive audience element too. And like there the is. Guest stars you guys have had like really run the gamut of all of the best names in actual play over the past year and a half.
It's honestly been incredible. Like, so we have this thing called Gameiotics, so people can play different things on their phone. I like to describe it to audience members when I go out in the audience pre-show as like being a lot like Jackbox games, so that they can literally just like be on a web browser. You don't download anything. You just get to play little mini games, answer questions, make elections. Everyone gets sorted into three teams. Everyone's working together, but it's whether or not you're working on which character's cohort that night. And so you get to help make decisions like what combat action I'm going to do that night if you're on my team that evening. Things like that, which is really fun. And then the incredible part, like you're saying, is all of these absolute titans of Dungeons and Dragons and other like TTRPGs are coming into play with us all the time, which is just crazy because all of us are just like, I can't believe these cool people want to come play this game with us. It's a real treat every single week.
It's such an interesting experience, the 20-Sided Tavern, because, you know, we talk a lot on this show about like actual play and like the future of it and all the different forms. And 20-Sided Tavern is a very specific slice of actual play and like what that can be. How do you define the show kind of on the spectrum of what actual play is?
Yeah, definitely. So we take the essence and a lot of like the rule set that you would play in a Dungeons and Dragons game. And we have also done things like heavily modify some of the parts that can get really, really crunchy and take too much time for the sake of a 2.5 hour one shot. Like even if you're at home, right, and you play a one shot, you need to allot 3 to 4 hours to kind of get through a lot of them. But for our sake, for example, combat goes until one side wins or the other one does, or something happens that would change the course. Like perhaps you talked in the middle and like now you're going to have a truce or whatever it is. But like combat has to have a conclusion. And the way we do it, instead of having an hour's worth of combat, which can often be how long it takes, we just do an over under. So every character gets around and the bad guys get around, and whoever had more successes than the other team, or if it's a tie, whoever did the most damage is the winner of the combat, just so we can expedite it. We like to kind of give everyone a taste of the Dungeons and Dragons stuff, like honor as much of the rules as we can while keeping it kind of approachable to the people who have never experienced Dungeons and Dragons before. So it's like part TTRPG, it is part immersive, improv, theatrical experience, and part game show.
It is a like Herculean task to try to onboard someone to Dungeons and Dragons, which is a like difficult game to get into right off the bat. In like a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
And to avoid the difficulties that can happen in combat, like silence at a table of five friends, like 10 seconds of silence doesn't feel like anything. 10 seconds of silence with a couple hundred people is amplified by orders of magnitude in the badness that it feels.
And that's like a big thing of what we do is certain combat options, like stun. One of the characters you can play if you're in the might track or like DPS track is a monk. And so Stunning Strike is a classic. We love that. That would take out whatever baddie you've hit for an entire round minimum. That's not fun if all of a sudden the one guy who's allowed to hit all three of us now can't do it at all. There's no over under or game that we're playing. So instead of doing that, it'll be, oh, hey, this one guy is now going to be rolling a disadvantage for his attack instead, just so we can still keep things narratively interesting instead of it just being a sweep if the monk got to go first, that kind of thing. So we try to balance it in a way that still seems fun for the new parameters that we're using, stuff like that. It's fun, and it's really funny to me to watch like absolute diehards get frustrated at us not doing the rules as written, as opposed to like kind of, there can be this fun like competition between like honoring the rules and also making it approachable that can sometimes play out in very funny ways. But usually we win everyone over by the end. There's not usually not a problem by the end. Everyone gets it.
Kind of like leaning in that like different kinds of play. You mentioned that there's like tracks depending on what kind of character. For you as performer, what is all of the game of character you're having to keep in mind? Like how much is that mechanical? Do you have like directives on role play, or is that all emerging on stage?
Yeah. I, for one, will do every track that we have except for DM. There's five on stage. We call it a DM, a TK. The TK is the tavern keeper. And that role does essentially secondary DM help actions as the DM needs to literally get through script pieces that have to be word perfect for the sake of lighting cues and things like that, and can be away from their computer. The TK can be Googling rules really quick, is sending in combat options to the phones real time, and also hitting combat effects so that like the cool fireball that showed up on the screen because someone cast a fire attack, that's happening live from the TK side. And then when you're on the bench, the bench is our players, and our players are red, blue, and green, and kind of the archetypes are might, magic, and mischief. So yeah, like each set has like a different kind of, has a different flavor. A lot of the characters could be interchangeable depending on build, but like it's just dependent on how you want to play it. I feel like my comfort track is magic track. I like to kind of like sit back, snipe from afar, which is kind of my joke style anyway. Whereas I think might and mischief tend to be like character-wise, the way that we have things set up, might typically goes first when giving an offer for improv, then magic goes, and then mischief goes last. And so the two at the beginning can say whatever, and it can be kind of funny, and mischief can say literally anything, and the rule of threes dictates that typically that's going to be the funniest thing and be selected. Right. And like there's certain things, so like mischief does a lot of the early act one options because they have the highest role for persuasion and deception typically, you're looking at like your bard being able to do that or your rogue being able to do that, which are in that track. And then our might character is a lot of our DPS. So we've got our monk, we've got our paladins, and our barbarian. And so that's going to be the person who drives the action, the person who typically is going to want to like hit first, ask questions later. So like it's a lot of fun to play around with the characters. And the best part about it too is that even if you see somebody else do the same exact character you saw the day before, you're going to see an entirely different interpretation, right? So like all of us have our different ways of doing it. My warriors are a lot more stoic, whereas some other people might have a lot more chatty, lead the way, charge into battle. But again, it's just like my comedy style leans into that a little bit better. So everyone's just kind of goofing and doing whatever feels comfy for them. It's really fun.
There's so much to juggle there in terms of like there's the performance, there's the stuff that you have to get out for like the audience to understand what's going on. And then I didn't even really think about like the crazy improv of lighting cues that the lighting designer has to do of this. There's like stuff that is set, but also stuff that has to be cued. I'm curious, what is the, because you have so many like guest stars coming in, that, especially people who are coming in from the actual play space where they're probably used to 3-4 hour one shots, what is that process like getting someone in on stage who hasn't done this before for the first time and like seeing them evolve throughout their run as a guest star?
Oh, it's so much fun. Our rehearsal process with the guests is absolutely unhinged, and I don't blame any of them for hitting that first show feeling very nervous. Basically, everyone's like, what am I doing? And we're like, you're doing it. Don't worry. Just hang on tight. Because
just hang on tight is a great way to put it.
Yeah, we essentially, people will fly in on, let's say, so like using the off-Broadway timeline as an example, they would fly in on a Monday, get to relax that night, which was our one of our shows. They would maybe come see the show that night. I think that would maybe be it. And then Tuesday, they would come in having seen that first show of ours, and we would work the only blocking, the only actual blocking is the first 15 minutes, which we call onboarding, where we tell people the absolute basic rules of Dungeons and Dragons and like, here's a character sheet, here's how the dice rolls work, you're ready to play. And so we do that, it's all scripted. And so we run that a couple of times with blocking. And then we start showing them some of the games. So we play games that they might be introduced to. There's three different ones with two different versions for each game, depending on which path the audience chooses. So we test those all out and then we call it a day. And then Wednesday, which would be our dark day, we would come in for a rehearsal anywhere. Half of us would come in and work with the guest again, where now what we're doing is a stumble through of the entire show. Let's show you how combat works. Our combat's different. You're going to give the audience two options. The audience will choose an option. You're going to improvise those the best you can based on the circumstances that day. And then you're going to like play it out, successes or failure, depending on how the rules pan out. So we do that for the combat tutorial, which is Act 1 combat, and then the BBEG combat, which is Act 2. And we let them try it out. And then after doing all of that and the stumble through of the entire show, we would then on Thursday show up at the theater, get fully mic'd, fully dressed, and do an actual full run through with no stops, like throwing them entirely into the deep end. And then we would have a dinner break and then they would go on that night. That's the rehearsal process for the guests. Wow.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Damn. So wow. They get like 2.5 rehearsals. It's That's crazy.
God bless.
And it's so much fun though, because I know firsthand because I joined the show halfway through or like partway through. I joined in August after they'd already been running for like 6 months. So I remember going up from my first show being like, that surely wasn't enough rehearsal. And I had like 2 weeks of rehearsals. And so our guests will come in and be completely nervous about the first night, feeling like they have no idea what they're going to do. And the whole thing is kind of like, you have everything you need. We promise you do. There's no way to feel good about the show until you do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so you just have to just hope and assume that everyone else, like we say it at the beginning, everyone's got your back. So yeah, it always turns out that the guests have a blast and they feel way better about it as soon as the first one gets done. And then they really lean in and get comfortable by the time they are like, they've done three or four. But it's a wild ride every time.
It is, yeah, a 2.5 hour long trust fall.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer of a time for the first time.
Yeah.
So, Jasmine, what's the total number of shows you've done now at this point?
Completely, including the off-Broadway stuff, I recently hit 250. So I'm probably around 260 at this point.
Wow. 260 shows.
Yep.
I want to know from that like first show or two where you were like, surely I haven't rehearsed enough to now, like, what are the big differences for you specifically, but also just like, has the show changed over time and like in what ways has it changed if it has?
Yeah, the show was significantly more railroaded when it opened. A lot more structured. The beats were the same when you would first enter any of the wards of Waterdeep. Lines were very scripted. You met the same NPCs the same time every place you went. And over time, the show opened up more and more for improv and more importantly, for role-playing. Being able to not be strict about who they're meeting in any given room and the relationships that those are leaves a lot of space for us to play around with any of the themes that we start with at the beginning or for the DM to punish us for having done something heinous before and find the ghosts of our past. That kind of stuff gets a lot more play because we can do whatever we want. And my comfort level is a lot higher. I know I can literally say or do anything. There's no wrong answers. But I still to this day will like walk around during pre-show, like before we've gotten started, and I'll be chatting with people in the audience. And I always have this like moment where I'm like, oh man, I think today's the day. Today's the day. Everyone realizes I'm not actually funny. This will be the one. And I like can't. You never kind of shake it because no matter what, you're still improvising every time.
Right. They found me out. This is the day.
After 300, that'll be the one.
That'll be the one. Yeah, 300, that's your max.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I, like, I'll fully admit, I saw this show, like, one of the pre-show nights when it first opened in New York off Broadway. And I struggled with the experience because of that railroad feel you're describing, where, like, yeah, where it literally, like, I just had this feeling where I was like, it doesn't feel like the player choices are mattering here. And so I'm delighted to hear that that's kind of something that has opened up more, and there's more room for sort of emergent storytelling. Like, in that vein, as you've been on this tour and, like, the off-Broadway run before that, I'm curious about those moments of, like, now that, like, things are more emergent, what are the, like, moments that have surprised you or, like, thrown you for the biggest loops when you've been on stage?
Honestly, our guests have been the greatest gift to that. Every single guest has brought something really cool and unique and has broken the game open in a way we never expected. The first one being when Felicia Day joined the show, that was our first guest, and she actually did the magic track. So, like, I took a step back, and then she got to do my track for 2 weeks. And the thing that she brought that was so incredible is day one, I believe, or maybe day two, she showed up at the woodworker's place. Like, there's a woodworker place that you can be in act one. And she didn't like his attitude. She decided that she did not like this guy's attitude. So on the way out, she was playing Dustin, our cowboy. He's a wizard. She cast Fireball on his place. She lit it up. And so she absolutely destroyed his workshop and killed him in that process. And we were like, as she was doing it, we're like, is this allowed? Like, I remember hearing about it after the fact. Like, people were like, can we kill the NPCs this early? Is that going to work? Like, what do we, like, we had not considered that you were allowed to do certain things like that. Like, so much of the show was originally railroaded because of lighting cues, because of, like, the crew that has right to follow us along on the path and has to get to certain places with us. And so, like, that started the process of opening it wide open. And then one of my favorite performances was when, I don't want to, like, spoil anything, but essentially our one shot every night is that there's a terrible smoke that's pervading, that's evil and causing havoc. And this purple smoke that's going around is going to be a harbinger of, like, destruction and, like, sorrow if it is able to seep into the world. And Abria DM'd for a week off Broadway, and we ended up with a show. For some reason, somebody, like, the havoc was around, like, some of us were breathing it in, and she had us do a bunch of rolls or wisdom checks or something, and I ended up being able to, or, like, other people got to commune with the havoc. So now we're talking to it as a sentient being, and we started having a conversation with it about, like, what's the deal? Why is everyone trying to keep you caged? And so it became the story of, like, chaos is not a bad thing necessarily. Chaos is the thing that lets change occur, and change can be good or bad depending on the hands that it's in. So then it became a story of the wizard is the bad guy trying to contain the sentient being and shouldn't be allowed to do so. And so we flipped the entire show on its head, ended up killing our quest giver, the wizard, and letting the havoc go free at the end, which we called a success that night because of what we were trying to do, even though in other stories that would be an absolute failure. And it was just like this absolute flip of the story that broke the game again. Like, we didn't have scripting for the end. She had to improvise the whole thing. And I think it's somewhere, and it's one of the most beautiful endings. But, like, yeah, there's all these cool things that our guests have brought in and just said, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I don't want to follow the railroad. I'm going to do something else. And you're like, okay, great. Let's go.
Oh, that's awesome. Has that changed for the, like, regular cast? Like, has that given you more permission after you see a guest pull a move like that? Do you think, like, do you see that have, like, ripples through the performances after they leave?
Oh, absolutely. I feel so much more empowered to be as unhinged as possible and to just, like, without worrying about breaking the game, just trusting that everyone else will figure it out later, just picking crazy things to do. We recently, I did Svezda, which is my astrology girly, and I do her very Cali from the Valley. And so we had decided that, like, The Apprentice is a character that might like heel turn or be abducted by the Havoc in other stories. And we had decided like early on that friends are always going to accept each other no matter what they do. Like, this was the thing we did before. Like, I will always support you, even if I don't like the things you're doing, and we're always going to get through everything. And we decided that plot point. And so when he did the heel turn, Svesta was like, nope, I promise this is my friend and I'm always going to support you. And then everyone else left and was against him. And I, at the end of act one, went with the apprentice and was like, no, I'm not into this. I promised. I'm going to keep my promise. And so when act two started and we did like the first act two improv beat, and when we went into the chase, like following the bad guy underground, I wasn't with the party. I walked behind the DM desk and I stayed there until it was narratively appropriate for me to rejoin them. And so like I ejected my character for like 20 minutes.
That's awesome.
Like, we could do whatever. It's very fun.
It's crazy to think about this in terms of like a more traditional actual play show. Like, I'm almost imagining like a podcast that is just playing the same one shot over and over again, and just seeing how many different iterations of the game you can find with the same like bare bones thing. Like, you know, every game of Honey Heist in the world has been wildly different from every other game of Honey Heist, but it all comes from the same one sheet of paper written by Grant Howitt.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that we're kind of proving it time and time again. The fun thing is that we get some folks that like, it's almost like deadheads for our silly RPG game. Like, we have people who have seen...
That's rad.
We've been in LA for 2 weeks, and we've got people who've seen 8 performances.
Wow. That's
wild. And, like, we had that in New York as well. I believe somebody got up into, like, the 50s or 60s of performances by the time we closed.
That's crazy.
That's rad.
And they keep coming back because the show truly is different every single time.
I gotta think, when you see a show like that so many times, it's fun to find the things that what remains the same and what changes. Like, it's almost an entirely different experience seeing it the second, third, 10th, 12th time, because now you have a context for what it is and what it could be. And you're one of the few people in the audience who's getting their expectations most thoroughly. You're having the strongest deviations from your expectations because you've seen a version of it before. You've seen an alternate reality of this thing.
It's one of those things that we try to explain to people, but also it's like, tickets are not the cheapest thing, even if you rush it. Like, so also totally get it, no pressure. But it's one of those things where we're like, the first time is fun. The second and third time is where the magic happens, we think.
I'm curious, after like over 250 shows, I'm sure you and the rest of the cast have a pretty good barometer of like when a show is, you know, quote unquote good or successful or bad or unsuccessful. What do you find are the most common like through lines for this kind of performance that make for a good show, however you want to define that?
It's so hard. So the shows can be really, really good with or without a super strong through line. It really depends on the performance and the people on stage. We've had incredible stories. One of my favorites off Broadway was where our bard ended up becoming part dragonborn or becoming more dragon. And then like, because of the conversations we were having on stage, it became like a trans allegory, and we were able to get him to fully change into a dragon, which is how he felt he should have been at the end of the show. And like, so we had comedy obviously throughout, but like we got to have this beautiful through arc that we like followed through and finally did like one last burst of magic at the end to get him to live his true life. So that's like a really beautiful, we've had stories like that. We get stories where we've got the whole audience like crying by the end because of this like through line we found and followed. And there's also just like shows that we call backstage Memes and Dreams. And those are fun too. And sometimes those are a laugh a minute show. We find a singular game that we decided on, and that game gives us so much mileage the entire show, even though there's very little like substantive storytelling. We're just having a fun time. So both are good. I think the hardest one is like the least successful stories are when we're like kind of just waffling around and not really finding a game together, or when a couple of us are playing a game and it seems like the other person isn't playing the game with us, and then we get backstage at intermission and have a talk about it. And like, we always chat during intermission to see how we can like bring things together for act two. But sometimes it's like, okay, great. I didn't realize you were playing that game or vice versa. And the thing that's crazy is because of the collaborative nature of it and because we're bringing the audience together as a team playing the games, there's never been an unsuccessful show. We get everyone really hyped by the end, but we know that we didn't have like the best show ever if the story or the memes or the whatever didn't really work out.
When you get through the first half and you go to intermission and you're feeling like it's sliding towards the less successful end, how do you go and pivot? Like, what does that conversation look like to get it back on track? And then, like, same question for, like, at the end of a show. When a show is like, that was solid, but it wasn't the best. After 250 performances, what does that conversation look like in order to keep it fresh and interesting every single night?
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is some days individual players are more successful than others. The best possible scenario is everyone really just was firing on all cylinders and absolutely killed the show. But obviously, like, that can't always happen. And so I feel like in the worst case scenarios, somebody's low energy and, you know, that's one or two of the people. There's three more people on stage, like, pushing the narrative forward. Even if the story doesn't feel as strong as it could have been, we'll usually find a thread that we think is the most interesting to then pursue in Act Two to try to, like, really wrap it up. Or if we've sometimes what we do is there's too many threads. That's easy to do as well. And then we'll try to either wrap them up as quickly as possible or focus in on one for the rest of the show. And then honestly, by the time we get to the end, if I wasn't feeling particularly good about a show that I did last week, it was fine. For me, it felt like a fine. And that has to also be one of those things where you kind of have to be okay with a show being fine. Like, there's no real bad shows anymore anyway, but I had to be okay feeling like I didn't do my best, but receiving feedback from people who watched it who said they had an incredible time. So, like, I conceptually know, because I've had incredible shows, that, like, this wasn't my best, but I have to understand that, like, we're every day's a new day and you have to let those things go. So you kind of just have to, like, walk away and be like, it's fine. Tomorrow's a new day.
It's always a good reminder that, like, if you're a 400 hitter in baseball, you are a Hall of Famer round one.
Yeah.
like you're getting in immediately.
And you're only successful a third of the time. Yeah, it's one of those. Like,
yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Hero Forge. There is no better gift for a gamer than a custom miniature of their beloved TTRPG character. So this holiday season, take the guesswork out of gift giving and treat your players to a digital gift card to Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. You can make minis in a variety of materials, including premium unpainted plastic and color standees, and they even offer downloadable model files so you can 3D print your unique designs at home. And for the dice lovers in your party, never fear, Hero Forge has you covered with their custom dice, which lets you put your hero inside the very D20 that will help lead you to glory. Visit HeroForge.com to send your players a digital gift card and let them build the heroes of their dreams.
Hi, my name is Robin.
And my name is Dylan.
Do you like Choices Matter video games?
If so, we started this podcast, Dorkspawn, so that I could show my best friend my favorite RPG series of all time, Dragon Age.
And now that I've played it, we want to share more of these choice-heavy games with each other.
Right now, Robin is showing me Mass Effect, which I have never played before.
And we are going to continue playing through these games together and discussing them book club style as we go.
You can join our Discord and play along with us and tune into Dorkspawn every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's a word you said there, which is feedback, which is something I feel like we end up talking a lot about, like, when it comes to AP and stuff like that. And it's like,
of course,
there's a thing of, I think that sometimes can be a struggle in, like, the AP world of, like, giving performance feedback, because, you know, we're only with people for a short amount of episodes. Like, often there's either little or no money involved broadly in the world of AP. And so sometimes people struggle with that idea of giving feedback. But you came from actual play and now have gone into this world of stage performance that touches actual play. I'm sure you've had to get a lot of feedback. And like, how, like, what are those sort of key bits of feedback in this kind of performance you think that have made you a stronger performer in this kind of play?
Yeah, I think for me, a big thing too, fortunately, since I started in the world of community theater, and this would be good for anyone who does actual play or stage, accepting feedback with grace is the most important skill you can develop in the performing arts. Because feedback is typically not actually personal, and it can feel personal. So, like, it takes time. But, like, I think if I were to give one recommendation for everyone, it would be that's the most important thing, first of all. And the way that they taught me that was, instead of saying excuses or instead of explaining why you did the thing that didn't work out and wasn't successful, you just say, yes, thank you so much for the feedback, and you leave it there. The other thing that I think is really important is that, like, the feedback that I was given largely is, for me, my big problem is taking up more space. And so I need to make bigger swings a lot of the time. I don't, like, and they'll argue with me, like, my director will be really mad if I say that I don't consider myself a good improviser, but I don't. I'm not really an improviser. I'm a character.
Boo.
I'm a character person.
Boo. Boo. Your director's right. Boo.
See, I know. I consider myself a really great character person. If I create a strong character, the improv comes from that, not the other way around for me.
Wait a minute.
You just described good improv.
Yeah. That's just good improv.
Well, that's just to say too that, like, if I were to play a straight improv game with you guys, or if I were to do like an improv jam or something, that's my actual version of hell. If I don't have a character to play with first, I need a base. I need a base for why I'm making the decisions I'm making. But being given the latitude, seeing over and over again that the choices that I'm making are fun, that the audience is having a good time, that my weird out-of-pocket comments are actually a thing that people really enjoy. So I was like, okay, I can be a person who kind of sits back a little bit more. I can be a person who watches the story play out, who can try to tie all the pieces together myself because I enjoy that. And then I can still, we call it like the sniper comedy style, where it's just like you wait, and every single thing is a little zinger. Like, I don't say as much on stage, but my success rate is pretty high. So, like, I can acknowledge, like, making bigger swings, being more confident, and honestly, the practice and the repetition is so hugely important to this work. So that's all been stuff that's been really helpful for me.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of, like, the amount of actual play that we've recorded, and yeah. It does not come anywhere close to 250 live shows.
In 3 years of show, I don't think we've done 250 episodes.
No, we haven't.
Even
I think
close.
We've done over 100, but yeah. Not touching 250.
But, like, isn't it crazy too? Because if you're, I'm sure early on it's a little more profound, but, like, the less that you have under your belt, the more important every single one is, or feels, rather. And so it's so interesting to watch it play out, because there's different ways of reacting to that from what I've seen, which is that I'm a person who's nervous about that. And so I will sit back more than I ought to. And there are people who, because they don't get as much time, or didn't get that much as much time that week, they push harder when they do have the time and the space. And so it's like, both are not necessarily the best habits. And so those are notes that we talk about backstage for each other, depending on, like, what kind of person we are. And yeah, it's just interesting to see the ways that it plays out. And sometimes it's not a bad thing. Sometimes it's two people who are low energy and someone else needs to push anyway.
That is an interesting point that I don't think I've ever, like, really thought about actively, of the more we do this, whether it's interviews on Talk of the Table, whether it's actual play on My First Dungeon, whether it's kind of any creative endeavor, the more you do it, the more reps feel like reps. It's like you can't take them, you have to take them seriously, but they can't be the end all be all. and you have to know that, like, if this one was bad, the next one can be good. A flub here is a lesson learned that you can then take to the next one. And once you get some distance in terms of just like number of at bats, now each one is just statistically less important. And so you can take bigger swings because you know they matter less. If that makes sense. That was a difficult metaphor to follow.
Yeah.
I mixed a lot of different things.
I think like a kind of example is like, even if you look at some of our greats in the world of like TTRPGs, and I won't say like specific names, but we know that some of the fandoms can be pretty toxic.
Yeah.
And so there are places like in the depths of Reddit where mean things are said about some of the players, and they're saying things that aren't even necessarily based in reality or aren't based on a singular person's one bad day. And it's just like, so it can feel really high pressure early on. And I think like the larger the body of work, the less you have to worry about that. But like so much of that stuff is out of our control. So you kind of just have to show up and hope for the best and then assume that the majority of people will notice if it was like an off day and it wasn't your best and that the other ones are going to be great.
Oh, it's so true. I feel like this relates to like any creative endeavor or kind of any endeavor almost of just like trying like a new thing. Like I'm thinking about like in publishing games. I remember when the first time I printed Project Echo, which was my like first book game, and I hand inspected every single copy of that book that arrived to make sure that it didn't have like errors. I pulled things with like the smallest dents and bumps that like no one but me would ever notice as like unsellable.
I remember seeing your defect bunch and I was just like, are you sure, buddy?
Couple
of these are regular.
It's insane. And I've dipped back into that defect pile over the years when I run out of stock. Like, this is perfectly fine. But then it's like now, like at the scale I'm at now, it's like, we just printed 1,500 books of A Land Once Magic for Viddy's game. And I don't hand inspect. I maybe hand inspect every like 100th as I'm like packing the orders. But it's just like, no. It's not the end of the world. If someone gets a bumped corner and like if they're upset enough, I can replace the book. It's fine.
Yeah.
I no longer am defined by the one mistake book of like my first time out.
Yay. Okay. See, it's anything public facing, it's like the stress anything is so facing. High at the beginning.
I don't know if this relates, but we were just having a conversation about Elliot. You recently like switched your like support email address for people who have like conflicts with games they've ordered from like your personal email address to like an info@moreblueberries, and the difference in tone between the emails you receive. Substantial.
Nobody is evil to me, I will say. I have not gotten any evil, but I get some curt, dear company, please fix this kind of emails. And I'm like, hey, it's me. I'm a guy.
I'm just a guy.
I'm just a guy.
I just needed to separate them from my inbox insanity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's fun. It's fun, the growth. And it's like, it's fun hearing you, Jesmyn, talk about like this kind of like to get personal if you're comfortable with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, to hear you talk about this kind of performance and like the way you're thinking about like your own comedy and like improvising skills. And like you and I played in a game together, I think over 2 years ago now with the Twice Rolled Tales folks.
Oh, yeah. The Regency
and
one?
It's just like,
I loved that one.
Yeah, the Regency one. We had so much fun, but it's like I can see just in talking to you and hearing you talk about performance, how much more comfortable you are in performance than, and you were great on that show and we had a great time together, but just like the way you're like talking about it, I'm like, wow, that is somebody who has put reps in and like grown in a lot of ways from that. So that's just cool to see.
Oh, that's fun. Thank you. I had so much fun doing that game with you. I still think about your esoteric rambles about random animals.
Describing animals 2 inches at a time in different ways.
From the perspective of someone who otherwise wouldn't have seen these animals on different continents, it was just unhinged in the best way.
Hey, the big swings.
It's
all
good.
About the big swings. I am curious, like, kind of as you you know, obviously your schedule is jam-packed right now. You're on tour, but you've had times, you know, where you've gone back to record at AP, and like I'm sure you will in the future. What are some of the things you're taking from this experience back into the world of like capital A, capital P actual play from that, like in a recorded format?
One of the biggest things that I'm learning, and I weirdly knew this about like self-taping for traditional roles in like film and television, but is really actually important everywhere in the performance space, which is understanding tone before you commit to like your character or your character sheet. Because I find obviously what we're doing on stage is so theatrical and we're making a lot of bigger swings and we're being a lot more campy in general, performative in general, as we are on this big stage trying to be big enough to fit it. And when I go back now and I look at certain character sheets and whatnot, I think that that's something that served me really well, is without realizing it tonally, I can pick something that might be quite interesting for the game, but still fit within the game. Like I'm not being a goofy little guy in a world of serious people, which I think can be really catastrophic if you go into a place with entirely the wrong tone. Yeah, so I think that that's been really important. Like, it's so interesting to think about that more. Like from the audition perspective, it was something like, if you're going to audition for something that's going to feel very like 30 Rock versus auditioning for something that feels very West Wing, like how the cadence of your speech, like the how you light yourself, things like that can all be, have a really big impact on the success of the material you put out and send out. So yeah, just kind of thinking about those types of things when I go back to doing more actual play, which I hope to continue doing. But yeah, I think that that's been really important tone.
I do think that is, yeah, it definitely like rings true of like the times when we've been most successful in like the actual play that we create. It's when everyone like really dials in on like one shared thing. And that shared thing is usually the tone of the piece.
I was wondering if you have any fun little examples.
A recent example, I felt like Slug Blaster was a lineup of tone. And I don't think that we had it right away in Slug Blaster, but I think like, but I think we found it in those first couple episodes of like the angsty, hopeful teenage tone. Like it's like we found this balance in vastly different characters, but I felt like it was like we aligned on tone.
For anyone who's listening who doesn't know, Slug Blaster, holding up the cover right now, just looks crazy. It's a game where you're playing teenage hoverboarders going into different dimensions to film tricks and try to look cool and also like deal with your angsty parents and stuff.
That's so cute.
It's good.
And actually the comment on tone, I think this is, and this actually clicked in my mind of what this is. This actually kind of goes back to what games I tend to be drawn towards and what games end up like fitting well in my first dungeon and also like just are more successful out of the box. And it's games that establish a clear tone, because it, without any work of anybody else, it allows everyone to get on one similar page. And once you have one like baseline, then the game is much more forgiving if individual character choices deviate from that baseline. But there's still like that static thing, which is why, you know, we end up getting drawn towards games like Slug Blaster or The Wild Sea. We were playing as pirates on a chainsaw-powered ship sailing on treetops. Like the tone of that feels very specific. You know, Orbital Blues is Cowboy Bebop, very specific. Whereas games that are a little bit more nebulous in the terms of like Dungeons and Dragons, Pathfinder, there is less of that immediate guaranteed common ground. And you have to be a little bit, you have to put a little bit more work in as a group to make sure you're on that same playing field. Whereas some like indie games that we like are drawn towards do that work for you in a way that just gives you a higher success rate of having a great session and having a great campaign.
Yeah, that is so interesting, because I do think some of those larger, long-form campaign games aren't going to build that outright. And if you buy like modules and one-shots, then you might get a much clearer tone. But yeah, like if it's too open, the options are really endless, which is lovely in its own way, but you have to do so much work as a team to get to the same place before you start.
And for some people, that work is like the fun of it.
Yeah.
But it is like, that is a difficult skill. And if you don't, if your table doesn't have that skill, you have to find it. Whereas there are some games that kind of like preempt that for you, take care of that so you can focus on, great, now we all know what we're doing. Let's go in all with the resources we need to pull the levers and make the game work.
And I think like pulling even broader from the personal perspective of like what you're bringing in actual play, do you think that like actual play has things to learn from the 20-sided tavern, like as a creative industry, as like an artistic effort? Like, are there things that you think the success or the style of this show can teach the broad industry?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I hope we're pushing game developers, perhaps, or other folks who are in this space towards, is really an emphasis on the rule of cool. We adhere so strongly to that in what we play. We'll eschew traditional rules, we'll make up roles on the fly. We play around with the systems just so that we can honor anything that might be possible, and you can roll for anything, even if it's insane, you know, the way that I think you ought to be able to. And I also think I'm hoping that it pushes people away from like raw rules as written strictness. Because I do think that if you get too in the weeds with that stuff, and obviously we are so far in the other direction, we're not even doing combat in a traditional way. But like, if you get too in the weeds over rules as written, you end up just kind of mired in crunchiness. And that can, for some people, that's fun. But for other people, it makes it unplayable, or it can be really just like, if my little guy can never do anything fun anymore, then why am I playing? So I think it's important to acknowledge that and to like be less precious about the rules. Even the games that I've played other games, and like you can fudge with the rules a little bit here and there, just have fun. I don't think that game designers typically are too upset about it, as long as you're having fun playing their game.
We've talked to a bunch of game designers, and many of them are all like, yeah, fuck it. As long as you're having fun,
great.
Do it.
Okay, good.
Especially when we fuck up the rules on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me curious of like, the thing that I think about when I see this, especially like going on tour and like being as successful as it is like, what, like we saw in games like the D&D start, and then, you know, the indie game emergence, and like, where does the indie game emergence in this kind of like improvised play theater come in? Like, are we, do we see other games brought to stage in this way potentially?
We've brought some rules that other people, or ideas and things that they have at their home games, we brought some of that to the stage occasionally. What's the one that Brendan Lee Mulligan has a name for it, where you roll two dice and you pick the one furthest from 10? There's a name specifically. It's like roll for like, it's not variance, but it's basically like whatever is the most successful or failure in either direction. Just to like, what's the most interesting thing that could happen? So roll the two, and whatever the furthest is the most interesting thing that can happen. And there's also like another one that I'm forgetting their last name, but Bex was a guest we had recently. And there was a role for flirting that we implemented very recently. I wasn't on stage for that one, but the idea is that the two characters who are perhaps flirting both roll a d20, and the closer they are to each other's numbers, the more successful the flirting was.
That's cool. Cute.
And yeah, so yeah. Things like that. We're implementing little things here and there and like fudging with the rule set that way, just because like, why not? That's fun.
I do love seeing like, I think the future of a lot of media is like kind of moving into like live performance and like just being in space together, being in community together in that kind of more traditional way. And I know like 20-Sided Tavern is doing that with D&D. I know Chaosium was doing like a 30-day run playing Call of Cthulhu at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which was very rad and cool. And I think they're hoping to do it again. I just want to see more people playing games. I want to see more ways that we can play games. It's just a lot of fun.
All the games, all the time. There's more and more places where people are trying to put different TTRPGs or different games like on their actual feet, which is happening more and more. So I'm excited to see how that starts to develop. I know that Becca Scott here in her studios is starting to implement a little more like actually walking around the different stage spaces for TTRPGs. So that's getting included. And then like we did the last Train to Bremen with Twice Rolled Tales. So filming on the actual New York City subway. So I'm excited to see where stuff goes.
It is fun to see these little like experimental edges of the edge of what is possible. And just like when, you know, a guest comes into 20 Sided Tavern and blows up the stage and like changes what is now possible. It just scoots the edge of what we thought the edge was a little bit further out.
It's a gift. I love it so much.
I guess there's another thing that kind of comes up on the show is like, we talk about like the ways people make careers in games. And like right now you have a successful career.
Yeah, it's working.
Through this. Which is awesome. And it's like talk about a thing that like couldn't have been imagined maybe, you know, 5 years ago, this kind of thing being your, because this is your full-time gig for people who don't maybe understand listening, right?
Yeah, because I've been doing the Off-Broadway and then doing the tour Off-Broadway. I was doing 8 shows a week because I was in the Magic Track full-time. And what's really nice for tour, because it's obviously more exhausting traveling as well, but we switched to a company model. So now all 9 of us rotate every single night, and all of us are cross-trained on multiple tracks. And so there's the ability now for us to have a lot more equitable divvying of shows. And so we typically do anywhere, if we have a bunch of guests this next week, so a lot of us are only doing like 3 shows. And so on any other given week, if we don't have a bunch of guests, we're looking at like 5 shows a week each, instead of like some of us having 8 and others only having 1 or 2, which is really so much more sustainable for this kind of a job. Because I'm not like, we talk about this sometimes backstage too, is like, it's an absolute gift. It's always exciting and always fun, but there's no phoning it in. You can't ever hit the stage and go to autopilot.
It is always a marathon and also always a sprint.
It is always both. And it's one of the longer shows that anyone's doing. Like, even if you go see a musical on Broadway right now, the longest ones are 3 hours. And that's so long. And we're doing a 2.5 hour one shot every night.
Right.
Yeah. So like,
it's just like physically exhausting.
It's very fun, but it's so mentally and physically demanding. And so like the split is a lot better. Yeah, it's a really cool gig. And then on top of all of that, like the gift of all of the guests coming in and out. So like I'm hoping to pitch like an actual play game show thing to a few people in the next few weeks. And then also like hopefully going to try to set up some more stuff while we're in New York. Game designers are really willing to like chat with any of us who want to help like write content for new games that are emerging. If they're like creating big giant books. There's like a newer one coming out that's gonna, like people are saying, is gonna be really popular next. And so we have like the access and the ability, a few of us, to be a part of it if we want to, or just like to start the process of like helping with any of the writing that might be included or game testing that might be included. So like, yeah, the opportunities are there. It's also just like carving out little places for yourself, video games, voiceover. Since we've had a bunch of the Baldur's Gate voices come through the show with us. So like things are like moving in that direction, and there's lots of space for a lot of different types of game play. So it is a really cool time right now.
This is the thing I've always been curious about just like anyone who is on a long running show like this, that has like, you know, 8 performances a night. Do you and the rest of the cast, are there any like games or bits that you guys are doing night after night that aren't for the audience but are just for you guys?
Oh yeah.
like what's the drinking game of the 20 Sided Tavern?
We have a bit that we cast. Do at the beginning of the show that's just for us. When the show starts, there used to be a shot election and then someone would make a toast, but we don't have like the shots on stage anymore. And instead what we do is a toast. And so somebody on the bench, one of the players typically, will come up with their glass and make a toast to the audience, perhaps personal, perhaps about the city we're in, and then cheers, and we start the show. And we've started a game now where like the DM or the TK will be like, so who's doing the toast? And then they'll be like, you have to fit in this word into your toast and make it sound seamless. And if you do, I'll buy you a drink later. Like, so we have this like stupid little game. What was the, like,
great.
from like Nantucket was one time. Like, I think Will was given, they were like, you have to fit Nantucket into this. We were in Philly at the time. And so it was just like, you have to fit the word Nantucket into your speech and it better sound seamless or you're not, you don't get a drink. And so I think he ended up doing something like, it's such a joy to be a part of the show. This tour has been incredible. There are people who have come to see us from, you know, San Francisco to Nantucket, and we are just so thrilled and just like seamlessly trying not to bring attention to it. But every time they hit the focus word, they don't react, whoever's doing the toast. But the rest of us will be like silently having a fit, and people are like, what are they doing? I was like, you don't know. It's just, that's what we're doing tonight.
It's for us. This is just for us. The rest of it's for you, but we get a little secret snack.
It's our secret games.
That's so great.
Ugh. And like, what's the audience reactions you hear to the show, like, in general? Like, does this, I think the thing about like this sort of thing, because it's got Dungeons and Dragons in the name, is it in any way that you can measure or the company has measured, like, driving people to the game, like to try the game?
I do think it's helping. And that's just based on us chatting with people at Stage Door after. Well, okay. I'll start off Broadway. Largely, our audiences had never played Dungeons and Dragons before. We started adding that question to the beginning of shows. And we would always see loads of people, hands up, never played the game before. While on tour, however, it has been very, very D&D player heavy in a fun way. And so a lot of people who've never played before are there on behalf of people they love who play a lot or other things like that. They bring their kids who love to play and they don't necessarily know the game themselves. LA's been fun because any of our longer stints will get more people who've never played the game. But what's been really interesting is people who've wanted to play, who know people who've played, love Baldur's Gate or other games that are like in the world of D&D, and then have just never been able to make a character sheet or find the confidence to like DM a game and like start their own group themselves. And I've spoken to some people outside, like one of the, there's this lovely woman who's come now to the show like 8 times. And she said that like the first couple of times was just really fun and exciting and made her more excited to want to play. And then like, that was an actual call to action for her. She set up a group. She has a friend who's going to DM now. She made her first character a little rogue. And I think she played her very first session either Saturday or Sunday is what she was telling me. And she's like, and I'll be back and I'll tell you how it went. It's like very sweet. It's so nice.
That's rad.
Yeah. So people do come and tell us about the characters they made or like the fact that the show made them more confident to just go out and DM. I think like are constantly skirting the rules or just doing whatever we crazy thing that comes to our minds really allows people to see that it's not like a scary thing. It's a literal sandbox.
And watching people go to the brink of disaster and still pull it back, it's like, oh, great. If they can do it, I can do it too. It's going
to
be great.
And also like when the deaths happen, we try to make them poignant and important or acknowledge the reason why they happened, whatever sacrifice was made. And so like being able to see that like while it is sad, it's also like important to the story we told. And so you can feel a little less precious. We can still want to make sure our characters make it. We can try as hard as we can, but we don't have to feel so devastated by the losses. Yeah, it's fun. Or like knowing that the losses are a part of the game.
I'm excited to see the show. Is it coming back to New York or is it staying in LA?
We're here for another 2 weeks and then we're going to keep bopping around for a little while. I don't know if there's a plan to come back to New York right now. If we do come back to the area, it'll be nearby, but probably not back in New York.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Have to come see it again.
There's also bootlegs. Maybe there's a good one. I'll be like, oh yeah, that was a good show. Because everyone can videotape. There's a whole
bootleg.
And
I love the
culture.
Idea of people passing around bootlegs of 20 Sided Tavern like they would fish records.
It's real. It's so crazy.
That's so rad. So Jasmine, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. It's been great catching up just as buds. And also like diving into your mind as an artist and as a performer in this like crazy wild world of actual play.
And I just have to, I'll message you at some point. I want to hear more about what's going on with you. I know I talked so much about the show. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know where the games. Oh, what have you been playing? How's it going?
Oh, all the listeners know what's going on with us. We'll save that off, Mike.
But the last question I want to ask you is the same question we ask to everyone we bring on the show, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our way of asking you for a recommendation of anything. It could be a recommendation of a game, a show, a person, an activity. It could be inside of tabletop, outside of tabletop. Jasmine Malave, what are you bringing to the table?
Oh, that's so fun. Okay, so I think the thing that I would like to bring to the table is that confidence is an illusion. Just do it. I believe in you. And there are no wrong answers. I think that for me, I would love to really echo that as much as possible for anyone who feels like they can't do something or that they're not qualified to do something. I just want to be everyone's cheerleader because I stay being my worst enemy and I'm doing this professionally. So like, you don't need to do that. It's not real. Don't listen to the goblins in your head. You got this.
Bravery and courage are being afraid and doing the thing anyway.
Period.
Jasmine, do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you and where they can buy tickets for the 20-Sided Tavern?
Oh, yeah. So you can find me everywhere at Jazzy Loves Drama. And right now...
I forgot that's your handle.
I was like, I'm going to do this like early on while I was still just doing like acting stuff. And I stand by it. You can get tickets for 20-Sided Tavern or check out where we're touring on the website. I believe it's just 20sidedtavern.com. We're going to be hitting a lot of places in the Southwest soon, and we're going to be going to the Southeast, I think, after that. They're adding dates as we go. She is in construction in the air. We are the little engine that could. So just keep an eye out, and there's more dates being added all the time.
And if you want more gamey content from us here at Talk of the Table, head on over to the Many Sided Media Patreon. There you can give us just a little bit of money and you will get bonus roundtable discussions, ad-free episodes, bonus actual plays from our actual play podcast, My First Dungeon, original music. We put original games, newsletters, a whole bunch of stuff on there for just a couple of bucks a month. It is the best and most direct way to support what we do here. So if you like this show, if you're listening to it, even subscribing for 1 month at the $5 tier is more financial impact than you will have than listening to all of the things we have made five times over.
Wow.
So if you really want to support this show and love it, subscribe for 1 month at just $5, download everything we've ever done, and then cancel, and we will still be extremely happy with you.
Do it. Everything's really fun. They're awesome.
You can also subscribe to the Many Sided newsletter for bi-weekly news, articles, and interviews. And if you want to talk about this episode or any other episode of Talk of the Table, you can become a member of the Many Sided Media Discord. We got a lot of fun conversations about actual play game design and more. As always, rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Yay. Bye-bye. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Hero Forge. There is no better gift for a gamer than a custom miniature of their beloved TTRPG character. So this holiday season, take the guesswork out of gift giving and treat your players to a digital gift card to Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. You can make minis in a variety of materials, including premium unpainted plastic and color standees, and they even offer downloadable model files so you can 3D print your unique designs at home. And for the dice lovers in your party, never fear, Hero Forge has you covered with their custom dice, which lets you put your hero inside the very D20 that will help lead you to glory. Visit HeroForge.com to send your players a digital gift card and let them build the heroes of their dreams.